You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Mighty Marvel Geeks on Sorcerer Radio. I'm Eric Carnes, and joining me this week, as every week, is the Wolverine to my Cyclops, Mike Emke. Mike, how you doing?
I don't know. I'm sensing a conspiracy between you and Aljon.
What kind of conspiracy? Do you think we're Hydra?
No.
Are you sure?
No. I think you guys are trying to turn this DC kid into a Marvel kid.
Yeah, you keep saying this. I'm pretty sure that it's Jim Lee and Dan Didio that are doing that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm stuck on one solid DC title, but as I get more and more into the comics of what I was reading, I've discovered I was actually and a bit of a Marvel geek as a kid, and not really realizing it. I mean, yeah, the Star Wars comic when Marvel had it, G.I. Joe when Marvel had it, but West Coast Avengers? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few. You're the,
yeah, one of the only.
All three of us.
thrilling adventures of Hawkeye and War Machine.
And I was also an Avengers fan as well, of the comic. So
that's also kind of surprising, because at the time Avengers was doing about as well as West Coast Avengers. You were at the height of the X-Men era of Marvel, and you're reading Avengers.
Hey, I was ahead of my game. I mean, I was wearing hockey jerseys as a fashion statement before it became a fashion statement.
And I think that statement is I need to lose 20 pounds.
Well, but now, speaking of which, geeky jerseys, they've got some cool Marvel-based hockey jerseys out there. They've got a Captain America, they've got an Iron Man. They're awesome. They really are.
Well, we will have to check them out then, Mike.
We will. So,
Mike, the new Captain America trailer is out. Have you seen it?
I have.
What do you think about it?
It looks great, but I'm disappointed in one thing. I'm disappointed in the Falcon.
Why is that?
It's not the character, it's the costume. I mean, Falcons, the red and white wings, the red and white outfit, but what do? They go with the typical shield, standard black. I mean, really? I mean, they did the same thing in Hawkeye. Even though, I mean, there's various versions they could have done with the purple outfit, from either the animated series or the comic. They could have gone like the animated and eased up on the headpiece, but why does everything have to be black?
I think it tracks a little better. I liked the Falcon's outfit. I mean, I thought it fit. It looked natural. They do have the brightly colored superheroes, but there's generally a reason for that.
Right.
It's given, sort of in the continuity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're not just throwing the costumes in there because that's what they were in the comics. Captain America was sort of an iconic World War II hero. Iron Man's armor, he made it to look like a hot rod. Thor's costume is sort of Asgardian garb. For everyone else, it's a more naturalistic look. I mean, I'm assuming that the Falcon is, a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, so he would wear something close to what the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents wear.
But I thought Falcon also had superpowers.
No, as far as I know, he's... I could be wrong on this, because I don't have that sort of encyclopedic knowledge, but I do believe his powers are just technological.
Here we go. It's time for Wikipedia.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the suit that gives him his powers. Hawkeye has superpowers.
Right.
But it's just like supervision.
Vision, right?
Yeah. Which, if you say that really fast, you get a joke they made in the Fairly Odd Parents. He's got supervision.
Oh, that was a bad joke. But
yeah, well, I'm not the one who made it. You know, true. If you have a problem with that, you can take it up with Butch Hartman.
I'm not having any problems with it. So, my lord, Wikipedia is not cooperating. I mean, I thought
the Falcon has an empathic relationship to birds. He can see through the bird's eyes, sort of like in Game of Thrones.
Right.
But it's nothing related to the flight. And I know in Ultimate Marvel they sort of cut that out. And the Falcon's costume in Captain America looks a lot like the Falcon's costume in Ultimate Marvel, which is probably more familiar recently. Right. Falcon hasn't been in the comics that much.
Right. It's still you know, it's something I grew up with. I mean, yeah, I understand they're probably appealing more to the younger crowd than the older crowd, but I mean, the older crowd like myself, I mean, we're going to be there. And I don't know, bring it on. I mean, they kind of did the same thing with G.I. Joe. Oh, G.I. Joe, it's standard uniforms. I was like, no, that's what separated everyone was, it was Scarlet had a bright, colorful uniform.
Yeah, that sort of red and tan number.
Yeah.
Scarlet was the only G.I. Joe I didn't have when I was a kid. She was like some sort of mail-away thing.
I think that was one of the first ones my brother picked up.
I never had Scarlet. I had all the other ones.
Here we go. Falcon's ability. Empathic link with Pet Falcon. Ability to see through the eyes of nearby birds. Flight. Skilled martial artist and gymnast.
Yeah, but the flight is from the suit. It's not under his own power, so. If you take away the suit, that is one of the lamest power sets of any comic book character. He's basically Bran Stark.
Right. But still, I want to see the color. I want it to be bright color. I don't want black.
I don't know if that fits with the tone of the movie so much. It does seem to be probably the darkest of the Marvel Comics movies, with the focus on S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, Bucky coming back.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that's a spoiler. They've, you know, from day one, have made it pretty clear that the villain of the piece is Bucky.
Right. Right. But yeah, it's cool. The action shots are great. The relationship between Cap and Widow looks pretty cool. I'm definitely curious to see how that's going to play out.
Let's talk about Robert Redford.
Yeah, that was cool seeing him. He's one of the older original founder S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, right?
I have no idea what role he's going to be playing. He said he was the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, as we all know, is Nick Fury.
Right. I think he was the previous director.
Well, no, if you saw the trailer, he was in the modern day. My first thought was he was going to be in flashback scenes with Howard Stark and the rest of them. But they showed him in the present day talking to Captain America and Nick Fury.
Well, let's get the character description, shall we? Okay. Where is he? Robert Redford as Alexander Pierce, a senior leader within S.H.I.E.L.D., and a member of the World Security Council. He is also an old comrade of Nick Fury.
Okay, that explains pretty much everything. He was one of the, at the end of the Avengers, the screens that Nick Fury was talking to?
Yes.
He was one of them.
Yes.
So he's Nick Fury's boss. He's not the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., he's above the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Redford was cast in this part as a homage to his roles in the 70s thrillers, such as 3 Days of the Condor.
Okay.
So that's allowing him to kind of flash back on his own is going to be fun.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, well, you know, he's Robert Redford. I was going to say he's a good addition to the cast. He's a good addition to any cast.
Yes. So, I guess.
So the trailer's up. That movie's out in 2014.
April 4th, 2014.
So that'll be right before. I thought that would be the summer movie, but that seems a little early for a summer movie.
Easter, maybe?
That could be. It seemed like they had, you know, a summer movie and a holiday movie, and they're sort of moving things up now. I guess because they're established, they could put out a new Marvel movie whenever they want, and people will go to see it in droves.
Easter's on the 20th of April. So why 2 weeks ahead? I don't know.
They can put it out whenever they want, and, you know, they have the audience now. People are going to go see it.
Right. Well, it might be a smart move, too, because depending on what else is coming out in April, depends on the competition.
Yeah, and, they Disney might have other movies that are coming out over the summer. I believe The Avengers was in theaters the same time as Monsters at University. Or close
possibly,
to.
Possibly. Well, I know 2015 is going to be a busy year between... Star Wars Episode 7, which Jimmy and Jason, you hear them talk about it on the show before us, which is Rebel Force Radio.
Yes, our good friends at Rebel Force Radio, who I've never met.
You got Avengers coming out. Guardians comes out. Am I right? It comes out later in the year.
Guardians of the Galaxy is before Avengers 3. Or Avengers 2. I think.
I thought it came out after.
No.
I thought it was like the Guardians November of the Galaxy release.
No, that's Ant-Man. Ant-Man is the first Phase 3 movie. Guardians is still before Avengers 2.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's... And then whatever Pixar releases... No, there is no Pixar release in 2015.
Yeah, Pixar's taking a year off. They got to buy your...
So, so yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a busy year still. I mean...
Yeah, 2014. I'm really looking forward to this Captain America and Thor. Thor comes out in like 2 weeks. I think a week, actually.
Loki 2?
Yeah, Loki 2.
Yeah, that's,
all the women in the world are going to be seeing Thor. Thor was, I think, my favorite, other than the Avengers, of the Phase 1 movies.
I like Cap. I like the Captain America.
I thought that was the weakest one.
Well, for me, I have the soft spot for Cap.
I like the period piece aspect to that movie.
Yes.
But there was so much of him and the Howling Commandos that they sort of glossed over.
Right.
To get to, you know, the confrontation with the Red Skull, the pacing felt off. Thor was sort of the most different of the movies because, you know, Iron Man and Iron Man 2 were sort of the classic superhero movies, and the Hulk was a lot like a classic monster movie, which is what the Hulk always was.
But at this point in time, Hulk, you had Eric Bana, you had Edward Norton, and then
Eric Bana doesn't count.
I mean, then you have Ruffalo. It's like, come on.
Well, I'm talking about the Norton movie. I like Ruffalo better than Ed Norton. I don't care what anyone says.
Ruffalo needs his own Hulk movie at this point.
Yeah. Hulk is hard to do as a movie, though, as a central character.
Right.
He makes a better supporting character. But my point was Thor was more of a romantic comedy with superhero elements than anything else.
Yeah.
Which I really loved. You know, they really played up the relationship between Thor and Jane and had the funny moments with, what's her name?
Sif?
No.
Or Jane's
Kat
assistant.
Bennings. Kat Bennings, yeah.
The assistant, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't as, I mean, when I watched it, I didn't get the warm and fuzzies with it like I did with Cap, like I did with Iron Man, or Iron Man 2. It's me. I mean, I like the cartoon, but, you know, when it was in the cartoons, but I just wasn't a big Thor fan all around.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was the strongest of the films just for, you know, it really shows what you can do with the Marvel characters. It
right.
doesn't just have to be, you know, a big superhero fight scene. You'd have a more human movie.
Right. Now, I think Hiddleston definitely stole the show, and I think he's going to steal the show again.
Well, yeah,
and
clearly.
Loki too.
That's why everyone loves Tom Hiddleston. All the fangirls have the crush on
yep.
Loki.
So remember, Loki 2 comes out in the theaters November 9th?
Yeah, 8th.
8th? Either way, that weekend, Loki
yes.
2 coming near you.
So, Mike.
Yeah.
In addition to the Marvel movies, and in addition to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel has been shopping around a 60-episode syndication package.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that. And it's going to cover what we talked about recently on Weeby Geeks about Agent Carter, right?
Possibly.
Possibly.
It may be separate. They're not giving any details really about what it is, other than 61-hour episodes. It's going to be 4 different television series.
And a miniseries.
Plus a miniseries.
Now, here's what I would like to see for the miniseries. Howling Commandos.
I think that would probably be part of the Agent Carter show, if they do that.
Well, they could do cameos, but
yeah,
I mean, they could easily do a miniseries on the Commandos and bring Chris Evans in.
Yeah, they could do that
for that justification.
Or Sam Jackson.
Yeah,
I don't know how they're going with Fury in the movies. In the comics, Fury is like 100 years old.
Or with the miniseries. Have that moment where Coulson is sitting down with Cap, asking Cap about Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
Hey, at this point in time, we're giving this stuff to you, Marvel. Come on.
Well, yeah, I think they would do, if they did anything with the Howling Commandos, I think it would be set after Captain America.
Four hour miniseries right there.
Yeah. The further adventures of the Howling Commandos. And I think that will be a place where you bring in Sam Jackson during World War II.
Right.
You know, in the waning days of World War II as Nick
right.
Fury.
Well.
And sort of establish him as a man who is, you know, because of the Infinity Formula.
Right.
If they want to go that route.
It could be one of those, like maybe the first hour and a half is Coulson and Cap talking to Coulson about the war and the Howling Commandos. And then the second half is Coulson filling in the story of what happened after he got frozen in ice with one of the adventures of the Howling Commandos.
Well, hopefully those would just be the framing devices. Then the whole thing isn't just, you know, Clark Gregg and Chris Evans sitting there talking.
Well, like I said,
although that would be interesting.
Like I said, miniseries. Four 6-hour miniseries. Or 2-3-night miniseries. You know?
Yeah.
And, cause we know Coulson's a huge Cap fan. And Cap is the one who had the most remorse when Coulson was quote unquote killed.
Yeah.
Because of that. I mean, there was a bond there. This is a chance for the two of them to have that bond. And it could be established that this was set during a point in the Avengers, you know.
Yeah.
During the Avengers or right after the Cap movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sky's the limit, but Howling Commandos, miniseries is what I would love to see.
Yeah, those guys in Captain America did really knock their roles out of the park.
Yes. And then, I mean, as you said, I mean, the characters come in for a 2 or 3 story plot, or 2-3 episode story plot with the Agent Carter series.
I could see them as the regular supporting cast.
That too.
You know, after World War II, Nick Fury wasn't the only Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Dum Dum Dugan was.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities. And I think the bigger takeaway is that Marvel has big plans for their cinematic universe, not beyond the movies, beyond Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, and they're talking 4. Well, if one of the 4 series is rumored to be Agent Carter, is this the opportunity to do Heroes for Hire as a TV series instead of a movie?
That would be interesting.
Even though a lot of people pan the comic.
Well, I don't think people pan the comic nowadays.
Well, hold up. Wait, hold up. Let me finish. People pan the comic, but I was one of the few who actually enjoyed it. West Coast Avengers?
Oh, okay. I don't know if we're going to see the West Coast Avengers anytime soon in the cinematic universe. Especially, they're planning to do Runaways.
Right. Well, what about...
Like, still, I don't know if you're familiar with Runaways, but it explains why there aren't any supervillains on the West Coast very nicely.
What about Young Avengers?
That would also be a possibility. I would like to see a Hawkeye show based on the Hawkeye comic. That's like my favorite Marvel comic right now.
Now, they're talking about with this, it's being shopped around to cable and video on demand outlets like Netflix, Amazon, WGN America.
Yeah, I have a feeling Netflix would kill to get 60 hours of Marvel programming original.
Oh yeah. I thought there was an issue between Netflix and Disney. I don't remember right offhand. So we're not going to get into that, until we can actually verify it. But I mean, if Marvel
Netflix
has a strong relationship, I mean, maybe it's just Disney with the animated features. I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, we're not going to get
into
that.
They have their own plan for that separate from Marvel, you know.
But yeah, let's see how this plans out. We know there were no announcements from New York Comic Con on any of this.
Yes, we will keep an eye on this for you. So and as soon as news breaks, we'll bring it to you.
Or Jarvis might inform
us
of it.
Jarvis could be in with the breaking news.
He could be.
We have his home phone number.
I think,
Mike, that it's time for us to take a commercial break.
Then let's take a pause for a couple
for
minutes, and we'll be right back.
Introducing Rebel Force Radio,
your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary
with Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
Rebel Force Radio.
You are on the front lines of fandom by listening to this show.
Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank usher in a new era of Star Wars podcasting.
Rebel Force Radio.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Stay tuned for special announcements about the Rebel Force Radio official webpage.
Leaving no Star Wars fan behind.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Hey, this is Mike.
And I'm Eric.
And we're your hosts of Weeby Geeks, your voice of the geek revolution.
What does that mean exactly?
It means our podcast is your weekly guide to TV, movies, comics, and all things geek. Everything but chick flicks and Twilight.
But I love chick flicks. Have you seen Bend It Like Beckham?
I said no chick flicks.
How do you not love Say Anything? That is a great movie.
No chick flicks!
God, why do you always shoot down my ideas? You know, Jack Kirby spent a decade drawing romance comics. Rom-coms are culturally relevant.
No one's going to listen to our podcast after hearing this promo, are they?
Probably not. Well, Mike, earlier this week, you and I sat down with X-Men legend Chris Claremont for an interview.
That's right.
We're going to play that for these guys right now. All right, we are here today with a comics legend. He's probably the person who's most responsible for the X-Men being what it is today. It's Chris Claremont. Chris, how are you doing today?
So far, so good.
We're super excited to have you on the show.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.
So, Chris, what are you up to these days? You haven't been writing X-Men comics. What do you do to pass the time?
Shepherd my kids, write novels, walk dogs, do PAs.
How many dogs do you have?
Well, we have one, but we're also looking after my father-in-law's dog. So we have one young dog and one very, very, very old but enthusiastic dog.
Okay. That sounds, you know, like a lot of fun.
Well, it's interesting.
I'll agree with that, being an owner of two dogs myself.
Well, this is a larger than standard poodle. A very old Labrador.
I have an old golden retriever and a Australian Shepherd, and they both think they're lap dogs.
Oh, the Oz Shepherd is cool.
Yeah, I have two cats. They do not let me walk them.
We have two cats too, so it's a very ecumenical household. Two cats, two boys, two dogs, two parents, two cars. It's very, it's a binary equation top to bottom.
I guess I want to go back a little bit with X-Men. What made you want to empower the women in X-Men during a time period where that really wasn't a cool thing to do, so to speak?
I have to say, it's weird. Each time I hear that question, no matter how anyone tries to phrase it, I sit back and I think, do you really listen to what it sounds like? What do you think? Empowering women. Well, I don't know. Why disenfranchise half the potential audience right off the bat?
Yeah.
The cheap but honest answer is that I wanted the characters in the book to reflect the people I knew in my life. And you know, both my parents and my uncle were in the RAF during the war, the Royal Air Force. My mother was assigned to a South Coast radar station in 1940, where every morning the the neighbors from across the channel would come over to visit and leave souvenirs. And after they'd left, the radar station had to, the staff had to tidy up the mess, re-energize the dishes, and scramble fighter command to go persuade them to behave more nicely the next time they came. How's that for a rather circumlocuous way of saying they got bombed and strafed every day?
Wow.
My best friend works for NPR and has done combat tours in Sarajevo. I mean, there's nothing like waking up for Sunday morning edition, and the first thing you hear over the radio is your best friend telling the reporter she's working with to duck because they're shooting at you with automatic weapons.
Wow.
And you can hear the guns.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so, you know, I have another friend who's a Pulitzer Prize winner whose specialty is research, was researching Ebola. So she'd go herring off to the middle of Africa on a moment's notice and research deadly killer diseases. These are not, if you pardon the expression, milksops by any stretch of the imagination. And it seemed only natural that they have characters as, I don't know, as emotionally and spiritually, I guess, attractive, accessible. You know, if we had really cool women characters in the group, we might attract a really cool audience. You know, why disenfranchise yourself by automatically throwing away half the potential readers?
Yeah, and, what's that, Chris?
Well, I was just going to say, quite frankly, in the most banal rationale, I really like women. So why can't we have as many of them in the book as we have of men? That said, it doesn't, you know, just because the only reason I wonder that people look at the women characters is because I was treating them or trying to treat them as credibly and responsibly as I did the men characters. But everything I did to make them more attractive and accessible was also applied to the men. If you look at the way Logan was handled over the 17 years on the run, if you look at Kurt, if you look at, Gambit was more when I came back in the 21st century, then, because I wasn't around long enough to do much with him before I left. But, you know, Beast was a heck of a lot of fun. Scott was fun. Charlie was, I mean, and Magneto were fun. Magneto, best of all. So, it's a matter of treating everybody with the same measure of enthusiasm and respect, and B, it's because richer and more textured characters provide for a much more creative environment. And from that environment can grow a whole host of really really interesting stories.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing that, you know, we even have to ask that question because, you know, even today, I don't know if you keep up with the comics, but, you know, Brian Wood has the X-Men title, which has a, you know, primarily female cast, and apparently...
No, it's all a cast of characters that I created.
Yeah, that's true.
Brian's writing it. Wow.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture? No offense to Brian.
I mean, he still gets, you know, questions about, you know, why are there so many women in the book? And
that's not the question I'm asking at all.
Why are they still using the same characters after 40 years?
No.
What's
why
your question?
Why can you establish a series consisting of characters created by a specific writer who's still employed by the company to write? Is he not involved in it in any way, shape, manner, or form?
Well, that's a good question. I, for one,
look,
I'd love to see
half dozen iconic characters of his own and wanted to do and started a series, I'd say more power to him.
Yeah. I see your point. I would love to see, you know, a Chris Claremont X-Men book today.
Don't hold your breath.
Is this like a problem with Marvel we should know about?
No. Editors choose the talent they wish to work with. All I'm saying is that there is a delicious sense of irony.
It would be sort of like,
I don't know, relaunching the Fantastic Four while Stan was still an active member of the creative environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I have a question. Speaking of editorial, I was just reading the Dark Phoenix saga.
Yes.
And at the very beginning, there's this scene where Xavier gives Wolverine demerits, and Cyclops tells him, "You can't do that, he's a grown man." Was that sort of a response to editorial telling you that the X-Men had to be a school?
No.
No?
No. There was very... At that particular point in time, editorial was remarkably discreet. The presumption, the operating presumption, which I guess had been established by Stan and then carried on by Roy and then Len and me as his number two, was if you have a team that works on a title, unless they monumentally screw up, leave them alone. There are more important things to worry about. In terms of that particular scene in Dark Phoenix, the point was to comment on Charlie's perception of his role relating to the X-Men and the X-Men's role to perception of themselves. You got to bear in mind, Logan, while Len's original concept was that Logan was an adolescent, Dave Cockrum's and my take on it, which became the defining element of him that carried through to John and beyond, is that he was an older, mature adult.
Yeah.
And as we subsequently discovered, well, as we saw in X-Men 100 and as we expanded upon over the subsequent years, when we say older, we were talking seriously older. So here's Charlie giving a guy who's at minimum probably a couple of hundred years old demerits, giving a guy demerits whose skill and technological abilities is to kill people without a second thought or a moment's regret. And okay. Scott is merely being the sensible crew chief and saying, scale back the teacher bit. You're dealing with an X-Men who are fundamentally not kids. Aurora is a grown woman. Kurt is a grown man. Colossus is the youngest, probably about 18. Logan is, as I said, old. Scott is probably 20 going on 60. Simply because his mindset is far more mature than his physical age would indicate.
Right.
Banshee is not a kid. You run down the catalog of new X-Men characters, they are all mature, grown-up adults. Hence the genesis of New Mutants, to give Charlie kids who are just learning their craft and life, and now he has something to do, i.e. teach them how to get their lives together.
Yeah. That's what's that?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that's right around the time that you introduced Kitty Pryde, too.
Well, i.e. the kid.
Yeah.
And Charlie had a hard time dealing with her, simply because he's not used to dealing with assertive Chinese, Chicago 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Who are nothing to sneeze at, trust me.
One other thing I wanted to talk about, your writing style has been described as being reminiscent of a soap opera, and I don't know if that was a conscious decision.
What
on
exactly
your part.
Does that mean exactly? I mean,
I'm using it as a compliment.
What?
I'm using it as a compliment.
No, no, no. But I mean, the point yeah. is soap opera.
More, I want to say more character melodrama and a bigger cast than we had really seen in comics up to that point.
Well.
In a good way. I know sometimes, you know, people don't like melodrama. I thought, you know, it really played on the strength of, you know, the comic as a continuing serial work. Rather than sort of...
You mean like life?
Yeah, exactly. But that's something that I don't think comics had much of before you came along.
Okay. I mean, to me, it was a perfectly logical approach to an evolving life reality, i.e. the lives of the characters. I get asked at conventions what my favorite story is, and the answer... Really, the only answer I can give is Uncanny 94 through 279. Because in my mind, in my opinion, it's all one story. It is compartmentalized into different beats and different, it might have different focuses in terms of characters and events. It may occasionally branch off into tangents, i.e. Excalibur or Wolverine, but it's one story. In the same sense that the life of... To go for the most absurd level, Barack Obama is one story, and yet there are tangential branches that are equally... dramatic and equally integral to the totality, but it's all one story.
Yeah, that definitely comes across. You know, it feels more, and it's really something that I don't think comics has had before or since, was, you know, one guy doing the comic for so long.
Not outside of newspaper strips, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that have come close, maybe, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man and Invincible. But, you know,
well,
aside from that...
I think the difference is also the gift that Dave and I had with X-Men 94 was a series... involving characters who had only been created in Giant Size One.
It's sort of a blank slate.
If you'll pardon the expression, utterly virgin territory.
Yeah.
And the only coherent, lasting linkage between Uncanny when I took over and the original series was Charlie and the school and the presence of Scott and the return 4 issues later of Jean. And that's it.
Yeah.
Everything else was brand new. Everything else was, again, pardon the expression, virgin territory.
You know,
he created the mythology and the reality as we went. When you look at any series that's come subsequently, none of that applies. Even if someone were to take over Uncanny today, they'd have to look at 40 years of backlist. Not perhaps for inspiration or as a means of, well, we can't do that, but it's just, it's not fresh territory anymore.
Right.
There's no concept appearing in the mainstream of, as far as I can tell, either Marvel or DC that is as globally fresh as X-Men lucked out to be in 1974.
Yeah. Probably the closest thing would be Invincible from Image Comics. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Off the top of my head, no.
It's written by Robert Kirkman, who does The Walking Dead, and I think he should probably send you a check. His writing style owes a lot to yours, I think.
He can stand in line behind Joss.
Now, with the X-Men
he's
character...
He's probably too busy laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, he has said a couple of times that Buffy the Vampire Slayer was inspired by Kitty Pryde. And, yeah, he's probably made a lot more money off of that than you have. Okay, I thought that was funnier. No.
I'm renowned for having no sense of humor, so don't worry about it.
Well, I just don't want to offend you.
No offense.
Between
just reminding myself, sometimes it's better to keep my mouth shut.
Between Magneto and Xavier, who do you relate yourself to the most?
There's no. It's not a competition. They're equal. There are probably aspects of my vision in both of them. I would suspect more in Magneto than Charlie simply because I define that much more of Magneto's history than Charlie's. But that said, you know, the evolution of Charlie having first, if you look at his history in, I guess when John and I were writing it, and he's flashing back with Moira MacTaggert, that's, we're talking about him emerging from Korea, presumably in the early 50s when he goes off to England and meets Moira MacTaggert. Well, now we've updated it so that he was in the Nam with Wolverine and Kitty's father. So there, the linkage is there. It probably won't be any significant amount of time before they update it from Vietnam to Afghanistan. Or perhaps Iraq in 1991, and then, who knows, Afghanistan in 2000. History in comics is extraordinarily fungible, except for Magneto, who's locked, like it or not. No, he has to be.
I agree.
Take him out of the Holocaust. He has no. There's no. He has no reason for being.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I should. You, I mean, you would know.
Well, we appreciate Chris, you coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, the problem with getting me on is getting me to shut up so you can turn it off.
Oh.
No, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thanks for the compliment. The pleasure was mine.
We thank you again for coming on.
Okay, that was the first half of our interview with Chris Claremont. If you want to hear the whole hour-long interview, you're going to have to wait a few weeks and go to weebiegeekspc.com, where we will be bringing that to you. And I think that's about all the time we have on the show this week, Mike.
Yeah, goes by fast. What a first show. Well,
yeah.
Talk about the Captain America trailer, talk about the future of Marvel TV with the live action. The legend, my lord, Chris Claremont.
Such a great guy.
I mean, where do we go from here?
I don't know. What show's on next?
I mean, for us, where do we go?
That's a very good question, Mike. But you know, we're going to have all the Marvel news for the Sorcerer Radio listeners, television, movies, comics. If it's Marvel, we'll be bringing it to you.
So you're saying all things Marvel?
Yes. That's our show for this week. I want to say thank you to Sorcerer Radio. Give a big thanks to our lead-in, Rebel Force Radio. Great guys. If you like the show, you can hear our weekly podcast on all things geek at weebiegeekspc.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at NecroFamicom. You can follow the show at Marvel Geeks. And Mike, what is your Twitter name?
WeebieGeeks. And you'll be able, if you like the show and want to listen to it again later in the week until the next issue.
Yes,
you can
issue
download
two.
Us. You can download us on iTunes.
This has been a Baby Geeks production.